WWA podcast from William Hill. Listen to the podcast at williamhill.com/podcast.
Yes, hello everybody. Welcome along to the FWA podcast. Every week we get 15 minutes or so with one of the leading football writers in Britain. Delighted to say this week it's Martin Lipton, the chief football writer from the Daily Mirror. Hi Martin, you well?
Yeah, obviously you couldn't find one of the best ones. You got one of the second tier ones. Fair enough. I'm more than willing to stand in for those who are better than I.
It was never meant to come out like that. I hope it didn't. Martin, you're in Geneva today. You were. This is the life of a top football writer, you see. You were watching Chelsea last night, and now you're in Geneva this morning. Must have been an early start for you, because you're recording this at 11 o'clock.
Yeah, no, I was up when it was still dark, so such is the nature of the world. I've had earlier ones. I'm here because the decision that we taken by UEFA Friday for the venues for the 2020 tournament, which is Michel Platini's brainchild Euros for Europe, in which there'll be 13 host nations, 13 host cities, 12 of them hosting group games and early round knockouts, and the 13th hosting the semi-finals and the final. Now, I think it's pretty expected now that England, Wembley, will get the showpiece, will get the 2022 semi-finals and final. But Wales, Scotland and the Republic of Ireland are all bidding to be involved in the group stage, and the suspicion is that only two of those are going to be successful when the decision is finally taken on Friday afternoon.
Interesting to find out what happens there. We'll come on to one of the subjects we're going to talk about today, which is the FA planning to reduce imported players from outside the EU. But first of all, can we look back on the Champions League? You're at the headquarters of UEFA. It wasn't a particularly great week for English clubs, of course. A lacklustre Liverpool laboured against Ludogorets. Dortmund dominated dysfunctional Arsenal. Schalke should have been beaten by Chelsea, and Bayern beat Hart in the end. Martin, pretty hard week all round, wasn't it? And the German club did pretty well against the English clubs.
Yeah, they did. I think, let's just say, two of the results weren't a surprise. One was.
Yeah.
Arsenal were shocking. They were absolutely hopeless. It was Arsenal at their worst. You know, we know that they can sometimes be vulnerable out wide defensively when they overextend themselves with the fullbacks. But for them to be that vulnerable through the middle would have been, I think, a major concern for Arsene Wenger. The fans have been saying, crying out, demanding a holding midfielder, a central defensive midfielder. He hasn't got one. You know, the chickens came home to roost in Dortmund, and that's the real problem for them. And also, it will enhance the feeling of their softness, their vulnerability, and that will be a problem for them for some time to come, I fear. Mm. As for the others, City, maybe just about through determination and grit, might have deserved a point. To go as far as they did at 0-0, they probably thought they got one. On the balance of the game, it was probably about right. Bayern are an excellent team, and they were without a few good players. I think what you have to say as City is, where's Yaya Toure when it matters? Mm. In these big games, he doesn't turn up. And you feel that he left out Aguero with an eye on Sunday, which is exactly what Chelsea did with Costa, left him out with an eye on Sunday, because both are going to be crucial in the clash of the weekend. Unfortunately, you need them. And the Champions League, if you don't, you know, if you go with a slightly reduced side, you have you run the risk of it blowing up in your face. And it did for Chelsea. And Didier Drogba, he's a fantastic fellow. He's been a great player and an icon and everything else for Chelsea. But he's 36 and he looked it. He looked like an old man. He didn't have that pizzazz. He didn't look fresh. And then the one winners of the week were the team we all expected to win. And my word, they made hard work of it, didn't they? They could have blown that away. I mean, I don't know what was more insipid, the performance by Liverpool or the colour of the Ludogorets shirts which emerged into the Anfield pitch. Even so, they got lucky. I mean, they really, really did. And you look at Liverpool, and they've only played once well all season. Unfortunately for me as a Spurs fan, it was at Tottenham, and they absolutely destroyed us at White Hart Lane. But other than that, they haven't really looked the part at all. They've been stuttering. They were lucky to beat Southampton, lost at City, very poor against Villa. This is sort of a continuation of that. And also, you could say the same of Arsenal. They haven't played well yet. They've played seven games. They've only won two of them. That was their first defeat on Tuesday night. But they had not looked good at any point, really, in this season, apart from in spells against City. But even then, City had three chances to win the game in injury time. So, you know, the two of the big four, the Champions League teams, who are not playing particularly well. Chelsea had a great start. It won't be a massive setback. And Mourinho will remember that the two times he won the Champions League with Porto and Inter, he drew his first group match.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's a great stat, that, isn't it? And you wonder if maybe Chelsea have got, you know, one eye slightly bigger on the Premier League than the Champions League. Just on Arsenal very quickly. I mean, obviously, whenever Arsenal have a setback, the Wenger out mob come back out as well, and justifiably so in a sense. The thing that got me, Martin, was whether you've got great players or whatever else. At this stage, most of those players have played in the Champions League for a few seasons, you know, because Arsenal always get there, they used to big games. It was the naivety that surprised me again, because why leave two men back, you know, against a team who we know can counterattack with what, 2 or 3 minutes to half time? It seems ludicrous to do that, doesn't it?
It was almost as if they sort of got a false energy out of the chance that Welbeck had missed just before, or we can get at them. And you know, the fair that the whole game they were on the back foot. They never looked right. They were bypassed far too easily in the middle of the park. There was no definition to the team. There was a sort of a hole in the middle, and that was exploited and exposed. And look, Dortmund are a decent team. They're not that great. I mean, they had a pretty average start to the season, losing games they would have expected to have won. And so they were very vulnerable. They were without Royce. They were without Hummels. And a few out of Gundogan. And yeah, I know Arsenal have injuries, but they just didn't show at all. They were really poor and they got exactly what they deserved.
William Hill put out some special markets on which English team progresses the furthest. Chelsea are the favourites in that market at 6-5. I must say, I like City at 11-4 in that market. Then Arsenal 7-2 and Liverpool 9-2. You could probably see Arsenal and Liverpool, unless they get really favourable draws in the round of 16, going out at that stage, Martin. There's an amazing stat about Arsenal. I think it's in the last 4 years when they've gone out at the round of 16 in each season. Of the 36 games they've played, they've only had 4 draws. They just seem unable to go away and get a scruffy draw, Arsenal. But City look like they could do that now, don't they? Even against a better team if they finish second in the group.
Well, they've got a better squad as well. They've got a stronger team. But they, you know, they've got to keep on. They've got to start producing and performing in Europe. They're behind the eight ball now. They've got a much harder group as well.
True.
They're in that group with Roma, who obviously started with a 5-1 win. Whereas Arsenal, they would expect to get through despite that. I think, you know, the battle for in Arsenal's group is who wins the group.
Yeah.
Not who goes out, because I think that the other two are fairly ordinary, and they showed that when Galatasaray sort of equalised in the last minute in their opening game as well. So I think Arsenal will go through. Then it's a question of who they get in the last 16. I think Liverpool will go through in second in their group. City only lost 1-0. If they were to win the next four,
yeah,
which is not beyond them, then they play, you know, knowing a 2-goal win against Munich in the final game wins the group. So they're still very much master of their own destiny, and Chelsea have got the softest group of the lot. They are nailed on to win the group despite that.
Yeah,
they'll
yeah.
win it. They won't win every game, obviously, because they've drawn one, but they won't lose any either. And if they do, it'll be the last game when it's already dead and they've qualified as group winners. So they're fine. They'll sail through.
The odds for each of the teams to qualify from the group: Liverpool are 1-10 to get out of the group, Arsenal 1-4, Chelsea 1-33. They're 1-3 to win the group, and 2-1 on for Manchester City to get out of the group, which isn't that easy. Although, I mean, Roma did win big, but if anyone wants a little bit of a laugh today, if you go on to, I guess it'll be on UEFA.com, have a look at the CSKA Moscow defending and the chance that they had when the guy falls over just as he's about to take on the keeper. It's comedy of the highest level. Martin, the FA have unveiled the latest plans to reduce imported players. This is from outside the EU. There'd also be, under the proposals, a ban on football league clubs signing non-EU players altogether. The 122 overseas players from outside the EU between 2009 and 2013. What's your view on this in general? Is it a good? I mean, it's not a total ban, because there are rules in place where players from the top 50 FIFA-ranked countries can be signed, and I think you can even get around that if it's over a certain limit anyway. So it's not like we would never see, you know, a Sergio Aguero come to the Premier League, or a Lionel Messi maybe, but I guess the idea is to keep out some of the guys who come from outside the EU to just to earn a living. Strikes me that we get more from the EU doing that than from outside the EU.
Well, we do, but we can't stop him players from the EU because that's EU law. But I think this is an overdue and welcome step by the FA, and the onus is on the clubs in the Premier League to support this. They keep on telling us that they, and I'm willing to believe them, that they genuinely care about the development of English players. They care about the development of the English national team. They care about producing their own players. Well, let's see you do it. Let's see you actually do. You know, under the Commission proposals is due to be an increase in the homegrown player quota from 8 to 12 over 5 years. That's welcome as well. It needs to be done. You cannot tell me that some of these players who come in as exceptional talents were exceptionally talented. They simply weren't. They were there, and they should never have got in. And the proof of that is that they end up being sent on loan within 18 months because they're not good enough. Or they're sold for a knockdown fee because they're not good enough. They should never have been in the country in the first place. If you're a really, really talented player, of course. There's one thing that Greg Dyke said in an interview on Wednesday morning, which is the work permit system was designed to get the elite players in, not to develop potential. And he's absolutely bang on. Players shouldn't be coming to the Premier League from outside the EU unless they already are world-class players.
Yeah.
Not might be, because a lot of might be world-class players turn out to be total rubbish. They never develop. They're just not good enough. And the argument some would say, well, to sit in this arbitrary cap of if it's a £15 million fee, you'll get a permit come what may. So what that will do is bump up fees because clubs will take them in. Well, they won't, because no club will want to spend £15 million on a player who's actually only worth £2 million, knowing that if he is, as they think, only worth £2 million, they can't loan him out. They're stuck with him, and he has to be on their list of 13 non-homegrown players blocking a place for someone who actually they would want in the squad. Yeah. So the sheer economics of it will preclude clubs from doing that. Maybe one or two will at the start, and then the economic lunacy of such a start will kick in, and they'll have to recognise and realise that it's a new environment, and I think that's all for the better.
Yeah, it's fair enough. When I first read it, I was kind of thinking, well, how many, you know, from outside the EU are there? And when you there's a great page on Wikipedia, which is just a list of foreign Premier League players. Obviously, that includes European ones, but the list of Argentinian players who've played in the Premier League is so long. And you look at some of them, you're thinking, they weren't that. Why? You know, just because, you know, and it's the same. You know, you look around. I mean, the amount of obviously Aussie players, US players as well. There's a lot on there. It's a much longer list than I expected to see, Martin. I think anyone who has a look at that will see how many ordinary players have earned their living from outside the EU in the Premier League. And you can't help anything that increases the young English player, the young British player to do well in the Premier League has to be a good thing, doesn't it? Simple as that.
The thing you've got to remember is the complaint from the fans is, oh God, they're just trying to make us play loads of English players who aren't good enough. No. It's homegrown, i.e. players trained by your club. It's the job of clubs to produce players, to actually train them. You can't tell me that there are no decently talented players in Europe who you could produce. Absolute nonsense. There are players who simply should never have been given the chance to play in the Premier League, who were never good enough. And it's not as if it's going to change overnight. The rules will change, but the effect of it will only really be seen in 4 or 5 years down the line when current existing contracts run out and the players move on. So clubs have got, in reality, four or five years to plan for this actually starting to have some real teeth. Well, they're multi-million pound businesses. If they can't do that, they shouldn't be multi-million pound businesses.
Mm. Yeah, agreed. The Premier League, of course, returns this weekend. 4 TV games, and the tricky ones from a betting point of view. It all starts with one that might not get the juices flowing, QPR versus Stoke, but it's intriguing nonetheless. 7-4 for QPR. It's 2-1 the draw and 7-4 for Stoke. That's about as close to a pick'em as you can possibly get. The evening game on Saturday is West Ham versus Liverpool, where West Ham are 7-2. Liverpool are just a touch of odds on at 3-4, and the draw is 11-4. We've got Leicester versus Manchester United, which is intriguing as well. 4-1 Leicester, 8-13 Man U, 3-1 the draw. And it all culminates in the game of the weekend. The two teams who many punters believe will be the first and second in the Premier League table come May. 6-4 Man City, 7-4 Chelsea, 12-5 the draw. Your thoughts on, I mean, QPR Stoke, like I say, it wouldn't be one for the purists. Not many goals scored by these two teams. I think they've only scored two goals each in the Premier League so far. But both teams will be desperate to get a win there, Martin, because they both need it for different reasons, really, don't they?
I saw QPR on Sunday. They were a shambles. They were an abomination of a football team. Absolutely awful. And at the moment, if you've got QPR at home, if you don't score four against them, you're under par for the performance, because they are terrible. But they're slightly better at home. Obviously, they beat Sunderland last time at Loftus Road. Added piquancy to this one is Mark Hughes going back to the club that sacked him, and he left in, it's fair to say, a degree of acrimony. Yeah. Wasn't very happy. He will be determined to make a point, as he did at City the other week. That'd be the ultimate double for him, to win at City, followed by QPR. They've got more to offer, I think, Stoke. Actually, they're a better team than their results have dictated. They're just not taking their chances at home, but actually they're quite a decent outfit. They'll be able to sit and frustrate QPR quite easily, and then they've got the ability to hurt them on the counter. And I have to say, I thought QPR was so ropey last week, and Sandro looked like it was a good bit of business by Spurs to get rid of him for six million, rising to 10, because he looked, well, I have to say, he didn't have an athlete's frame, did he? Let's be polite about it. If the perennial question is who ate all the pies, he would be a candidate.
He's in the lineup.
So there you go. Yeah, so I fancy Stoke to win that.
Yeah. West Ham don't really like playing Liverpool, it's fair to say. They've had some torrid times at the hands of them, and not least Steven Gerrard as well, who I think scored seven goals against West Ham in his career, six of them at Upton Park, and that's where this game is. But, you know, maybe 10 days ago you'd have been all over Liverpool. Suddenly West Ham, after that performance at Hull and the goals and the strikers who look like they've fitted in really well together, they could have a real go at Liverpool here if they adopt the same kind of attacking stance they did at Hull.
Well, that's what the fans will want. Yes. I think there's a chance if they do that. Because without, albeit I assume that Sterling will start, without Sturridge's pace, they don't have the same threat, and they don't have that quite the same vitality, Liverpool, clearly. Balotelli is an outstandingly gifted player, but he isn't a different version of Sturridge or a version of Suarez whose pace will kill you. So they don't have the same scare factor at the moment that they had last season, with the exception of that game at Spurs, when, of course, they had Sturridge and Balotelli with Sterling in behind at the top of a diamond, and they were absolutely outstanding. But they are looking a little bit more vulnerable. Defensively, they're not so clever. We've seen that. I mean, they've given away soft goals in a number of games recently. And whilst I still suspect that Liverpool will win, you wouldn't think it would be an easy, comfortable victory. Yeah, I mean, last season when they were going for the title, they only won with a late penalty 2-1 in a really good game, although there's some shocking decisions both ways by the referee, but the game was actually really good. But they couldn't handle Carroll. Carroll's not playing, but Valencia. I mean, we saw in the World Cup, there's one game, I think it's Ecuador against France. He must be, he jumps with his head above where a basketball hoop would be. He's a fantastic leap on him. Mm. And against Lovren and Saka, he can cause problems. I think Saka played in that game for France, from memory, in the Maracanã. And I think Valencia can cause him all sorts. And it could be a really interesting game. Now, I put it this way, if the spread is on goals, I would probably buy five.
Yes. Yeah. It's amazing. I mean, you look at the Liverpool away record. Since the turn of the year, there have been 55 goals in Liverpool's 11 away games. I mean, that's phenomenal, isn't it? I mean,
five a game. Yeah. And you can see it. I can see five goals in this game, 3-2 either way. So, you know, I think it could be a really, really interesting game. I still would nudge it to Liverpool, but I would certainly not do it. I wouldn't put your house on it. I wouldn't do it with any great certainty. I think it could be a really interesting and tight game.
Yeah, over 4.5 goals in the game is 17-5. The Sunday games, Leicester versus Man U. I'm intrigued as to who this is a harder challenge for, because Man U obviously destroyed QPR, but they barely laid a glove on Manchester United. They won't get that kind of treatment from Leicester. Leicester have, they drew 2-2 with Everton and drew 1-1 with Arsenal at home, and probably should have beaten the Gunners, actually. This will be a bit of a tougher test for a Man U side who really need to find some consistency from here on in, don't they?
Well, they do indeed, and we're interested in what sort of formation he goes with, how he picks it. If he's picking what I think is his first choice, I don't think Nata will play. It would be Rooney behind Van Persie and Falcao, but Falcao looked a little bit off the pace, still coming back from that knee ligament injury, it seemed, last week. All the fans taken to him straight away. Di Maria was fantastic, wasn't he, on Sunday, and that's the problem for for them. And you wonder maybe that you see Cambiasso having a job to try and keep him under control, his fellow Argentine. He must have played with, I'm sure he played with him for Argentina. And he obviously made his debut, he came on last week. And he's a very experienced, wily character. They'll go for it. Lowe's had a brilliant start for them, hasn't he? Three goals and looked really sharp, another Argentine. And he'll fancy himself to get one. It'd be a massive goal if he could. They've done brilliantly. They've exceeded expectations, I think, Leicester so far this season. And Nigel Pearson will be delighted. And it almost be good to get this one out of the way, because then he can actually start to play normal games as opposed to really, really tough ones. Because he's had a horrible start. You know, they've had Chelsea when they played. They actually played really well for the first hour and were... And if Nugent takes his chance, they'll go up. You know, that's how well they played before they succumbed 2-0. So I think this will be tough for United. And they're not that great at the back. Even against QPR, they made mistakes. In fact, if QPR really had anything about them, they could have, it should have equalised. Phillips had a superb chance, which he wasted after basically doing nothing. It was gifted on a plate by bad defending. And you feel that even at the moment, with Rojo and maybe Shaw starting, that they've got a Rick in them, United, at the back. And it will be a feisty old encounter. United probably end up winning 2-0, but they may have a scare on the way.
Yeah. The final one, Martin, of course, is the Man City-Chelsea game, both obviously playing the German opposition in midweek. The difference being that Man City... had to go to Germany and had to expend an awful lot more energy, it looked like, from my point of view, sat on the sofa, than Chelsea did. But you'll tell us better. You were at Chelsea. I mean, Chelsea didn't seem to be going full pelt to me.
No, they thought they were going to win too easy. Yeah. Probably they should have done. And it's very hard once you switch off to switch back on. They did that, to be fair. They had four chances in the last 10 minutes, all of which could have gone in. Two off the line, a great save by the keeper and a spoon over the bar volley from Hazard, who I have to say has been sensational. He's been brilliant so far. Every time he gets the ball, he brings you off your feet. He's a fabulous talent. He reminds me somewhat of a bigger, stronger, quicker version of Joe Cole, when Joe Cole was at his best in that Chelsea side in sort of 2005-06 time, in that he has that same bearing. He looks like him physically now. He bulks up in the way that Joe did. But, I mean, Hazard is much younger, and he's absolutely fabulous. His pace is terrific. You can't get the ball off him. He loves... taking on defenders, trying to trick, and he'll be really important for them, and like he was in the game last season when Chelsea went out there. And people forget, because of the way Chelsea finished the game, that in the first 20 minutes they were battered by City. Silva missed a gilt-edged chance. They could have been 2 or 3 up, and then suddenly the whole thing changed and Chelsea should have scored 5. They were absolutely brilliant for 20 minutes either side, half an hour either side of half time. They were fabulous. And they won the game deservedly so, but it was to no avail, of course, as they ended up third. They are in a great position. Even a defeat isn't terrible for Chelsea, because they'll still be top of the league. If they were to win, that would put up a big gap between themselves and City early on. And although nothing is definitive in September, if you give Chelsea 8 points over 33 games, you know, that takes some catching. You've got to find your form to do that. So they'll be aware, City, and the pressure's on them. It's a game that they have to win far more than Chelsea, which allows Chelsea to play slightly more conservatively. I think they'll play with Ramirez and Matic as the two, with Fabregas tackling in between them and then joining, and then Hazard left, probably Willian right and Costa up top. And that they may do it differently with Schürrle, but I think Willian's, because of his work rate and commitment, is the right sort of player for that game. So they won't play with the sort of the more gung-ho 4-2-3-1 they have shown sometimes. It'll be more like the way they played at Everton. And of course we know what they did at Everton when they killed them. They were devastating on the counter-attack.
William Hill have put out a special bet about Chelsea to go unbeaten throughout the entire season at 16-1. You'd want a slightly bigger price than that, even though it's probably fair because they're such a good side. If they go through this one without being beaten, then that's a major tick along the list. Because really, I mean, you know, City are if Chelsea are the best, City are without doubt the second best team in the league. Would there be one bet this weekend that you like more than any other, Martin? One result that you think will happen?
Well, what I would think is for both Aguero and Costa to score.
Yeah, that's a nice one, isn't it?
On Sunday, because I think they'll be in the game.
I don't know if you've seen Mourinho saying this morning that he won't start with him, but it sounds like mind games to me.
What he said was if he'd started him on Wednesday, he couldn't have started him on Sunday. But that's why he didn't start, so he can start on Sunday. Yeah. I believe he'll be fit for Sunday. He'll start. because it's a big game.
Yeah.
And also, Chris, they haven't got the same. Drogba isn't there. Remy's still finding his feet. Aguero needs to start. He's a goal scorer, but he can score off the bench. We've seen that time and again. And I think that I think you'll end up 1-0, and I think they'll both score. But I think the better bet maybe for them both to score, because then you get better value on that than you would do for a 1-0 draw.
Yeah, Aguero and Costa to score. It wouldn't be a big surprise either, would it, if you saw those two on the score sheet in this game. Thank you very much, Martin. It's a pleasure to speak to you. Enjoy your day in Geneva, and I hope your UEFA treat you well.
I'm sure they will. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Martin Lipton, the chief football writer from the Daily Mirror. It's at Martin Lipton on Twitter. We'll be talking to one of Martin's journalistic colleagues at the same time next week. So if you want to download the FWA podcast, it's available at footballwriters.co.uk, williamhill.com/podcasts. It's on audioboo.fm, and you can subscribe to iTunes and you get all of our football podcasts delivered straight to your device. Thank you very much for listening. And if you're having a bet on any of the markets that we've discussed, then very best of luck.